You know what song has been on repeat on the metal channel on Sirius XM?
Psychosocial.
Ozzy Osbourne's Under the Graveyard. Like,
interesting.
I mean, every single day they've played it for like the past 3 days.
I don't think I've ever heard that on the radio.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great song and it's like,
yeah, yeah.
I need to look up the lyrics because it's a really good karaoke song too. But
I also thought you were going to say Ghost of the Navigator. Ghost of the Navigator. It's been years since I've listened to it, but there's another one that I've been like, oh, maybe that one, because they played it on the radio all the time where I lived.
Well, I mean, this is like not typical radio. This is just like satellite radio.
Yeah.
Oh, it's that fancy radio.
Yeah, right? That commercial-free radio. Yeah, but yeah, that song, Under the Graveyard, is like in my head right now.
It's just going to be our outro music this episode.
Oh.
Yeah. Sharon Osbourne coming after us? Nah, I'm good.
Yo, I found a clip of Teddy Kyle Smith doing an interview with like a child for like Sundance when he, you know, when they mm-hmm. open the book, he talks about how he's in like a full like furry.
Mm-hmm.
I love
yeah.
how they call them furries. He says, there's a lot of stories to tell about it, especially about the transitions that we have in life and making the changes and adjusting. So there's definitely lots of stories out there that need to be told. And once they're told, I think a lot of people, society in general, would really get a good idea of who we are.
It's so true, yeah. though. It's so true.
Right? Yeah.
Hearing that makes me very hopeful that this younger generation and even, you know, the Jeff Barnaby generation who are taking these oral stories they heard mm-hmm. and putting them into these film, podcasts, audiobooks, YouTube videos, formats, and getting it out there, I really hope like it opens people's eyes a little more.
Me too.
Yeah.
This month has, you know, just doing our deep dives and stuff is really stuff I would have never even thought about. Mm-hmm. I've really opened my eyes to.
Yeah. Well, welcome to Beyond the Screen.
We need a little better segue than that.
Okay. I mean,
be like, well, that's why this episode we're talking about, this is our last episode in honoring Native Americans, or we're discussing storytelling.
The only thing I could think of was Under the Graveyard. We are rotting. But yeah, I mean, this is our last episode focusing on Native Americans, and what better way to wrap up by diving into storytelling and the importance of storytelling and recounting cultural history through storytelling.
Yeah.
On this episode, we are going to discuss the true crime audiobook/podcast Midnight Sun, written and produced by Alaska native James Domick Jr. with Josephine Holtzman and Isaac Kestenbaum. This is a 2019 Audible Originals production, and it's a free audiobook. So if you don't have Audible, download it. Download this book. It's a super good listen.
And it's like 3 hours, so you can get through it in the day.
Super short listen. Like if you're driving somewhere or something, going on a road trip, you can knock this out easily.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. In the vast Alaskan Arctic, legend has it there once lived a mythic tribe, the Inyukins, that only existed in rumors and whispers. A local actor turned fugitive, Teddy Kyle Smith, had an encounter that brought Inyukins from myth to reality. Smith was an aspiring actor with a promising career until it all came quickly crashing down with the death of his mother, him shooting a gun outside the house, and then running away into the Alaskan wilderness.
I mean, you have to be extremely brave just to run into the Alaskan wilderness.
Yeah. Oh my god. Well, first of all, to live in Alaska, that takes a special kind of person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, then to run into the Alaskan wilderness. That's brave.
Yeah. So the writer, the storyteller, James Domic Jr. is the great-grandson of the last of the Inupiaq storytellers, and he shares his journey in discovering who Teddy Kyle Smith was, what he did, and what he really saw. Domic even goes into the mountains to retrace Teddy's steps in an attempt to experience what Teddy experienced, an encounter with the Inyankins. So the story is narrated by Domic, and he does a really good job.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, like setting up this whole story, bringing in the legend of the Inyankins, and he includes audio clips of interviewees, of actual police audio files from the whole situation with Teddy as it unfolded, starting with his mom's death.
Yeah, because I guess in Alaska, they don't do body cams. They do recorders on their bodies to record situations, which, cool,
yeah.
I guess.
So the story goes into what happened, some background on Teddy and his burgeoning acting career, then his unfortunate downfall, which happens at the conclusion of filming the indie movie Wildlike, when he returns home to Kiana, where he is found with his dead mother. After acting strange when a neighbor comes over, he walks outside and allegedly accidentally pulls the trigger on a gun, runs out into the wilderness, is found hiding out in a cabin by some hunters who try to take refuge there after a failed hunting trip, but they end up getting shot and left for dead by Teddy. The law eventually catches up with Teddy, who claims that he saw the Inyankins when he ran to the mountains and they stalked him for 10 days. Okay, let's talk about these Inyankins.
Yes, the mythic legends of the little people, the Inyankins.
Yeah.
So the audiobook opens with the narrator, James Domic Jr., telling the tale of how the short but strong Inyankins lived alongside the Inupiaq tribe. Legend has it that an Inyankin child was killed and eaten by a loose sled dog of an Inupiaq. The entire Inyankin tribe moved up into the mountains because of the carelessness of the Inupiaqs, and they were never seen again.
Crazy. I mean, really cool fucking story to just have a tribe of different type of people that live near you and then randomly just walked away one day, never to be seen again.
Yeah, they're like, you know what? Screw this. We're leaving. And then they're gone.
Yeah.
I feel like Alaska's like the only place you could do that left in the United States if you truly wanted to.
Yeah.
Because it's just so vast. But interesting about the Inyankins is there's so many versions of them. I mean, pretty much, from what I read, there's different tribes and different regions of Native American folklore all have some type of little people or a mythical tribe that just walked off and left,
mm-hmm.
which the names vary from all these different tribes. But also, other cultures also have small people. Iceland has gnomes, which people kind of put Inyankins in that same realm as them. You know, Switzerland and or the Scandinavians have elves, and they're also combined in this like weird small humanoid cryptid.
I've seen pixies grouped in there too.
Pixies scare me the most out of all the little people.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why. Maybe because they fly.
They're flying and annoying.
Oh my God, they're like flying cockroaches.
Oh my God. But apparently these Inyankins are super strong and fast and intelligent and, you know, could lift a whole caribou by themselves. But they've also been described as like not wearing clothing or only wearing animal clothing, being extremely hairy with their face not covered in hair, which reminds me of Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm.
So the mini-me version of Bigfoot. Or they have pointed ears, very similar to elves. So it's kind of crazy that the Inyankins have been around in their probably culture for thousands of years, and also, you know, before anyone made landfall on any type of North America, that Iceland and Scandinavia, and I'm sure China, all have very similar versions of little people.
Earlier today, I found a YouTube video that I shared with Patrick and Stephanie. It was 10 instances of little people caught on camera, and they're questionable at best, but reading the comments below people, you know, usually on those things, people are talking about, like, obviously this is fake, it's CGI, you know, like discussing that. But pretty much every single comment under that was, oh, I've heard about like the little people from my grandparents. And yeah, like we have stories in Mexico about little people. And then they were talking about, yeah, in Saskatchewan and Alaska and like all these different people. They're like, yeah, I they're there. Like I've heard about these like forever. Like my family told me about them.
I would love for them to be real. I love cryptids. It's one of my favorite things to like read about mm-hmm. and see. But also because James Domick, he mentions that the idea of living the old way, just walking off into the woods as your tribe lives the old way like they were 1,000 years instead of being colonized is such a great, like, it's almost like a dream idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that comment he makes. How is it possible that there is a group of folks out there, a tribe that have not been colonized and they're living their authentic, mm-hmm. just natural yeah. tribal life that could totally exist? And they, yeah, they could have like, you know, hair everywhere and leathered skin because that's just how they've always lived.
Yeah, that's what you need to survive in those conditions.
When you said hair and leather skin, I just imagined a nude Willem Dafoe, and I don't know why. It's the first thing that popped in my head. But
you spilled your beans.
Why did you spill your beans? Another thing about the Inukans I found interesting, there's a lot of reports of them being extremely helpful and like nice and charming, and then other reports where they're just evil. They're going to kidnap you and sorry, you're never coming back to your home ever again.
Yeah, one of the interviewees was saying like he didn't want to talk about them because he's like, if you talk about them, it's like, you know, inviting them, their presence around you, and they're going to fuck with you.
Yeah, but getting to like the storytelling part of this is trying to find an actual story about the Inukans. The only real story, concrete story, was told by James in this book. Mm-hmm. There was a few tellings I watched on YouTube, but I don't know if they were about Inukans or not.
No, it was very vague.
A different name, very vague. All the research I did for finding like anything written about them, there were so many different names. I don't know if it was actually Inukans they're talking about. So this idea of like it's still a very oral story and still kind of just not recorded very well is very intriguing.
I was watching a TED Talk. It's called Native American Oral Storytelling and History. It's with Seth Fairchild. And he was talking about what storytelling means to Native Americans and not having written accounts of things to pass down. He was saying that, you know, when somebody, I think he was speaking about his grandmother, like when somebody dies, the world will never hear their voice again. You only get your storytellers. The one thing that he said that really resonated with me, he said, every time an elder dies, a library burns with them. You know, think of all the post-apocalyptic or apocalyptic movies we watch. Like, you know, all that stuff, all those written things, what are they for? Like, nobody's reading them, nobody's using them. All you have are oral accounts of the people that you're with.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's also, it comes down to very much how different they treat their elderly too, mm-hmm. as this library of knowledge. Tell me these stories. I need to learn this from you. A lot of times today, we just put our elderly in homes.
Yeah.
And then a lot of times their kids don't go see them and that's it.
Yeah, it's really sad.
Yeah, even Domick comments that he's the last of the Inupiaq storytellers.
I thought he did a really good job about bringing that first full circle in the book.
Oh my God, yeah, he did. I was like, my eyes were watering at the end. I was like, oh my God, I want to hug him.
Yeah, I mean, he says telling stories is one of the ways we make sense of things up here in Alaska. It's kept me and my people alive for tens of thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
When we started recording this, I was talking about how the younger generation and like Jeff Barnaby, who did Blood Quantum, it's great because they could take these oral stories and put them on book form and film and TV shows. And I want to personally see this. I want to see these stories be told. I don't know. At this point, them coming out and telling these stories, I feel it could get very corporatized and muddled.
Yeah.
And then become something different, you know.
Mm-hmm. What is the studio going to want? What are producers going to want? How can you reach a wider audience? Don't seclude people. They're just going to get watered down. And
how are you going to get funding and allow the writer and the director to have full control, you know?
Yeah.
Because now you have so many producers with their hands in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's got to come from a cast and crew being native, in love with the story, and this is what they want to tell.
Mm-hmm. It's super important to keep the indie industry alive and thriving. And it makes me think of, I forget the title of it, but Patrick, that short that you mentioned in the previous episode and how it was indirectly funded by Gas and Oil. And it was a short
Bloodland.
About the atrocities of gas and oil on the environment.
Yeah. And not even just the vibe, but their people, like,
they're
taking the land that they live on.
It's supporting arts and the creativity of people to share their stories.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely the courage for people to share their stories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it takes a lot of chutzpah to spend the time and money to produce something.
And not even produce it. Brave enough to sit there, put it on paper, and then read and be like, I want other people to read this.
Yeah, because of course, you know, you're not going to please everybody. And to have something so personal have the opportunity to be scrutinized by a vast majority of people, it's like walking a fine line. It's like, I don't know, like, how can I tell these stories without, you know, people basically like shitting on my culture, you know?
Yeah. Which is going to happen. Welcome to the age of internet.
Yeah.
So everything's going to be shit on.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
And in this book, Dominic does a really good job of getting people to talk and share their stories because he's one with them. He finds connection. He finds friends who can call up people and have them come over for some drinks and hope that they want to share something.
Yeah.
He was on a mission. Like, he was just like calling people, just showed up. He was very driven. And he was so entertaining to listen to. Like, just his humor, the ease in which he spoke and everything. I'm like, I could listen to him tell stories all day.
He did a really good job of the lighthearted parts being funny and like entertaining. And the serious parts, he does a really good job about being serious, but he also adds like this. There's this questionnaire behind the whole story. Even in the court case, when you're listening to it, they bring up some points, which I'm sure we'll bring up later. He's kind of questioning, and it's serious, and then, you know, I don't want to ruin the whole ending of his conclusion, but he just wraps it up really nicely.
Yeah. As I was watching, like, the time left on, like, the chapters and everything, I was like, man, this is almost done. Like, how is this going to wrap up? And I was like, that was perfect. I was very... Yeah. Satisfied with how everything came together and just the full narrative.
Yeah, and a shout out to his producers, Josephine Holtzman and Isaac Kestenbaum. I found an article from the Maine College of Art where it looks like they were part of a documentary program, and they took great care to treat everyone who participated fairly because there are ethics of storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially when you're asking people to discuss violent and tragic events.
Personal tragic events.
Yeah.
So getting back to the story, Teddy's in the mountains and the next encounter is with two brothers, the Buckle brothers, and they were out in the Alaskan wilderness hunting bears. And I'm like... Some people are absolutely wild and they do things where I'm like, wow.
I know, right? Wow. I'm always like, I love nature. You know, if the zombie apocalypse happened, I'll be okay. I'm like, I get lost going in a circle. I can't make a fire. I'd probably eat poison oak or something because I'm an idiot. I'd be like, oh, it's a leaf.
I love going hiking and camping and I love seeing the wilderness. But in Alaska, those bears are... grizzly bears, and they're fucking huge. I'm good.
Have either of you seen The Edge?
No.
It's from 90s, Sean Connery, Alec Baldwin, maybe.
Whoa, what a cast. Rest in peace,
Sean
Connery.
Really good. It's really good. It's like a wilderness movie. And Bart the Bear, who I don't know if either of you know, was nominated for an Oscar in the 90s.
Good for you, Bart.
I know, right? He was in like a couple movies, and yeah, he was like a really cool bear, and he had like his trainer and everything. So
I'm staying away from apex predators.
Well, speaking of bears, these Buckle brothers were unsuccessful in hunting bears, and they found refuge in a friend's cabin. And mind you, Dominic rolled up to one of the brothers' houses and knocked on his door and was able to get the story out of him. So the fact that we have these details from Dominic, he was trying to get in touch with Paul Buckle and he didn't hear back from him. So he just walked up to his house because he's friends with his neighbor, who was a character all on his own, Brett.
Jacuzzi in the fucking living room? Come on.
I can get down with that, Brett. Let's talk about, you know, spirituality and you know.
I know, right?
Yeah. So Paul opened up to him and told him this whole part of the story, which...
It's crazy.
It's so... Yeah. It's also terrifying. Straight up terrifying.
Oh, extremely. Yeah. Extremely terrifying.
Yeah. So, you know, not to go too much details, but the Buckle brothers go to their friend's cabin and they find Teddy there. Teddy is playing a part because he was a really good actor, and they think that they're safe, but Teddy pulls a gun on them and ends up shooting one of the brothers point blank in the chest and the other one in an arm as he's running away. These two brothers managed to survive in a cabin in the middle of Alaska.
By him putting together a old Marine RF radio.
Yeah.
That could be a 30-minute short film or
seriously, a
90-minute indie film by itself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, talking about the ethics of storytelling and, first of all, getting this person to say, hey, recount the worst experience of your life where you almost lost your brother and you had no idea if you were going to survive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell me about this traumatic event.
Yeah.
This is a part of the story where I did get a little confused by Teddy's actions because, you know, he does blame everything on the Inukuns, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
But then just attacks two very obviously innocent people. And I couldn't find anything thinking Inukuns are shapeshifters or anything like that. So.
Right.
I was kind of confused on why Teddy did this if it was for the, you know, Inukuns.
So Dominic and these folks got all the audio from the trial, from like police recordings, mm-hmm. and it's included, which adds to the experience.
Yeah.
And in the trial, Teddy talks about how he was pretty much hunted for 10 days by the Inukuns. Let's also think about he was in the wilderness for 10 days with, I mean, did he have supplies? I don't know.
He said he ate berries and drank water from the streams.
Yeah,
because
he just ran into the wilderness with nothing.
But his will to survive?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it sounds like he was stalked and haunted by these Inukuns, so he was probably not in the right frame of mind. And two people show up. Who knows what was going through his head? I mean, he said he heard voices. He needed to make sure that these two people were who they said they were. And he just had a change of heart.
I guess it kind of does make sense because he does state that he would hear them talking to him at night,
mm-hmm.
and he felt if he responded they would take him away forever.
And he did say he acted in self-defense when he shot the Buckle brothers.
You know, that reminds me of the last episode we did when I was talking about the smudging and how a few people in there mention, you know, my grandparents, I've always heard this, that if ever you hear like a voice calling your name, don't respond, you know, don't call back because it's going to take you.
Yeah. If anyone listened to our story earlier this week, that creature pulled some aspects from Navajo folklore, which if you hear your voice of your friend, but you know it's not your friend, don't go out there.
Mm-hmm.
Hearing these voices and responding to it seems to be a kind of a common theme in a lot of these creatures.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the law caught up with Teddy. You know, he went in, had no issues, and he stood by his story in the in court.
Not even in court. As soon as he's picked up, he's telling those cops, Inukens.
Yep.
Those are the nicest cops.
Yeah, right?
They're almost Canadian.
I know. Like, oh, okay, yes, yes, tell me more.
Yeah, the prosecuting attorney, who also was like a falconer.
Yeah.
Badass.
The characters in, or I shouldn't say the characters, but the people in this story are so interesting in their own individuality.
Mm-hmm. They're Wes Anderson characters. He was a lawyer, but also on the weekends he did falconry. It's
just... Seriously.
Sometimes he brings his falcon to court.
Yeah.
Teddy's talking about it was the Inukens, and his defense attorney was like, I guess I'm just going to roll with this. So the prosecuting attorney says we need to change the charges to attempted murder because of mental illness. And he's like, no, I'm not mentally ill. I'm super clear-headed. This actually happened to me. This story gets even more interesting because then it brings in this, did Teddy get a fair trial? Because he did not have a jury of his own peers. Peers being people who have the same culture as him, have the same beliefs as him. And Teddy's lawyer, Angela Green, stood up for Teddy and validated that what he believes in is no different than any other religion. Mm-hmm. And I loved her comment. She says, the experience that Mr. Smith had, a cultural and spiritual experience that turned out very badly, but it's a cultural experience, not a mental illness. He's no more mentally ill than any other belief system that we have that is criticized as perhaps irrational at times as well. And then Dominic comments on how the missionaries, which I love that that's a subplot to this entire situation. In the beginning of the book, he says, this is my native name, like Millikook. Everybody talks about this is my native name and this is my white person given name.
Yeah.
My Christian name.
Yes. Exactly. It's so frustrating because, I mean, yeah, each nation, each tribe has, they're so culturally different. It's like, you know, looking at like the major religions, the theology of it, like the main point is basically, you know, like treat people nicely and, you know, it's all going to be hunky-dory. With, you know, Native Americans, it's, you know, balance. It's understanding how you fit in with nature, and knowing that is how you learn to respect other people. You don't respect other people because, you know, that's what I'm supposed to do so I can, you know, get into heaven. It's more than that. Because those different tribes have all these like different stories, you know, when people came over to colonize, they're like, wait, this is way too much. Y'all don't have like one cohesive thing. So this is weird.
See, I think you nailed it on the head, though, Holly, where Christians, Catholicism, they're going to heaven, where Native Americans, the spiritual realm and the earth are, it's in one place. It's all there.
Yeah.
So respect where you're at. You know, it's a very different mindset.
I think it was in the TED Talk I was listening to. He was saying that, you know, the spiritual plane and our plane, they are parallel. And once in a while, they'll just converge and like cross paths. And, you know, maybe it's to teach us something or give a little glimpse and say, hey, you know, this exists, or, you know, let me help teach a lesson. It's just something that it's easily said, like, okay, whatever, like, that's, it's crazy talk.
Dominic comments it's a justice system built by white people and run by white people in a state created by white people, governed by white people, and most Inupiaq people will never serve on a jury. The only time they'll see the inside of a courtroom is if they're in trouble. It takes the power away. You're only on the receiving end of the punishment.
You know what's really fucked up about that? You're in trouble. We'll pay the money to fly you from anywhere in Alaska to so you're in court.
Mm-hmm.
But sorry, we can't spend that money to bring anyone else in to be your peers and as a jury.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, goodness. I love the way that he described walking into that courtroom. He's like, it was built like a church. Pews everywhere. Yes. Just rows and rows of pews. Judgment sitting right front and center, staring down at you. I'm like, yeah, that's what a church is like.
Yeah.
But it's really fucked up. The court system only is very obviously one-sided is what we're trying to get to in this rant we just did.
Okay. Teddy, super talented actor, but was not without his demons and unfortunately was an alcoholic. As we learn through the story, partied real hard. Let's wrap about, was Teddy actually haunted by the Inukins, or was it just a combination of alcoholism and stress, you know, trying to pursue a career as an actor? And also an actor, trying to be an actor from the middle of nowhere, Alaska.
I would like to believe that the Inukins haunted Teddy and he did these things because of them. I don't believe that. I believe his alcoholism got the best of him. The stress he had mentally broke him and he snapped. And he didn't know what to do, you know, because they didn't give a real official death on his mom.
Right. I was going to say, we still don't know how the mom died. We just know that there's a little blood on her lips and she was holding a cord that measures power usage that should have been in the other room.
Yep.
Yeah.
Him walking in and seeing his mom dead could have caused him to snap.
Mm-hmm.
Drinking could have caused something else. I don't want to put speculation out there, you know, for anything, because nothing's proven he didn't go to jail for anything like that. But something caused him to snap when the police first show up and he's standing at the edge of the forest just looking out. And he's sitting there and he's like, I want to talk to my fucking sister. This is him deciding, what do I do?
Yeah.
Do I embrace the snap, or I've already embraced and I'm lost and I just need to run? We've all been there.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, when you're an alcoholic, it's a little more intense. Your mind's not in the right state. I think he snapped and ran.
There were two comments in chapter 4. One of them is in an interview with the casting director, Deb Schultz, and she comments, acting is telling the truth under imaginary circumstances. That is insightful to Teddy's situation. I mean, he was an actor and he was telling the truth under imaginary circumstances.
Yeah.
Another quote in chapter 4, a fellow actor comments, to be an actor, you have to have a relationship with a dark side, which I love, love rapping about the shadow self. But yeah, you have to go to dark places and tell the truth.
It just like any other storyteller, like what happened here, it's like, all right, not getting these phone calls. Well, let me do something really uncomfortable, maybe dangerous. I don't know what kind of situation I'm getting myself into. I'm going to knock on this door so I can get the truth so that I can tell this story. And I feel like Teddy's experience, Patrick, like you, like I want to believe like these little creatures, they're like, you know, all over the place. And I feel like it can be one of those instances of, you know, that myth meeting, converging with our reality. It's like, you know, he had an issue, like he has an addiction and all that stress and everything. And being fans of horror and dark things, we all know that if you are mentally, emotionally, physically vulnerable, you're vulnerable to anything else out there. If the sad emo kid starts playing with a Ouija board, you know, more susceptible to like shit happening than the happy-go-lucky person who just wants to have an afternoon of fun. So I think it's quite possible that what he was seeing could have been a manifestation of, you know, what he was experiencing mentally. And, you know, whether they are tangible, whether anybody else could have seen them, the reality that he saw them and he was experiencing it, that was very real. And who knows if that was all his physical brain or if that was something else mixing in there, because that's one of my biggest fears is to experience something so ridiculous, like nobody's going to believe this and it's going to affect me so much and everybody's going to be like, you're crazy. And it's like, no, I know what I saw. Yeah. I saw this. Just fucking believe me.
Yeah.
I don't think Teddy is crazy or mentally ill at all. I just think he got really stressed out and was not in the proper mindset during this whole situation.
Yeah. I mean, in the beginning of chapter 6, there are a variety of folks who know Teddy and believe that the Inukuns exist, and it's super possible that Teddy did have an experience with them.
Mm-hmm.
Even Paul Buckle was like, it's totally possible that, yeah, Inukuns were the cause of this.
Yeah, and at one point during the story, I almost believed it was the Inukuns because James goes out, grabs a shaman named Sin. Her and him go out hiking the same route Teddy took.
Was it? I don't think she was. I don't think she was a shaman. She was just
no. She wasn't a shaman. I couldn't think of the word to like your guide. The shaman was the first thing
she
came up.
No, she was like a because
a shaman's
badass,
a guide.
Yeah,
wilderness
not a spiritual
hiker.
Guide. Hiking yeah. guide. Yeah.
Yeah. She was a hiking guide.
Yeah.
Sorry, guide. The word guide couldn't come to my head. But Sin and him take the same route that Teddy did when he ran. Through half of they're like, this is total bullshit. He didn't see anything. And then they see something man-made. And then they find the trails that shouldn't be there that Teddy talked about. Then they hear weird sounds. And it's these small little things, which, sure, the trails could be created by deer, caribou, moose, bears. They could be taking those trails. The sounds could be an animal that maybe you're just not familiar with. Or they could be something else. Because that man-made thing, they don't know what it was.
They had mentioned, like, these trails did not seem like game trails. Like, it's not just going to be from animals stomping through. Like, they were very purposeful. And then like the branches, like they were markers in a certain pattern. I was like, oh my god, that's creepy.
They also commented that they were hiking and burning through calories, so there is no way that Teddy would have been able to get to the cabin off of water and berries. Like, he must have gotten help or something along the way. I don't know how much, was it like 40 miles from where he started to that cabin? Like, Patrick, you have gone hiking.
Yeah. My hikes a day, I ate 3,500 calories constantly.
Yeah.
I was constantly hungry.
He was saying like how they would have oatmeal and put like a stick of butter in there just to have calories.
I was trying to pack light, so I cut down my breakfast. My first stop I made, I tripled my breakfast intake and just went to the grocery store and paid, I fucking kid you not, $7 a pack of instant oatmeal. It was an expensive day.
Yeah.
But I was doing like 12 miles, 15 miles a day, and I was flying through food. So him, you know, like she just said, 10 days in, living off berries is hard to believe. But also, Teddy's from that area, and a good hunter, a marksman, a marine. He could have said he just lived off berries and water. He could have really been hunting some small game. I'm sure he knows how to build a fucking fire.
Yeah.
You know? One thing that really upset me about this story, though, was the sentencing of Teddy. He did not murder anyone. What he did was bad. He almost killed two people. But he did not kill anyone that we know of.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to throw speculation in there, but we don't know. 99 years, our prison system is not meant to rehabilitate people, is meant to keep them locked away forever. And 99 years for something. A life sentence is 25. So, I mean, what he did is bad, but he doesn't deserve to spend 99 years in prison.
No.
10 years, maybe, rehabilitate him?
Unfortunately, he had a pretty bad rap sheet.
Yeah.
Had previous assault charges. you know, he had that situation in New York, which they talk about.
Wild.
Yeah.
Just wild.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he also, you know, shooting a gun into the neighborhood wasn't great either.
No, but it's not enough to... I think that's a big problem here in the United States is you do one bad thing, you're locked up for the rest of your life. You do a few bad things, you never see the light of day again. Teddy was a troubled person. He had issues. Mm-hmm. A lot of them stemmed from alcoholism.
Yep.
Rehabilitation can help you.
Yeah.
They didn't even give him the option of rehabilitation. You're going to prison for the rest of your life. Lock, key, done.
And it was so sad to hear, you know, the thought that maybe he, you know, when he ran into the wilderness, it was his way of like, you know what? I need to go back to like his brain just yes. needed to go back to nature. And then with this sentencing, he's never going to see nature again. He's locked in. Like, I can't imagine the pain and torture that it is for somebody who is so connected with the earth and just nature and seeing it on a spiritual level and never being able to experience that again.
Dominic even says that Teddy went out to nature to see the land one last time. It was like Teddy yeah. knew it was over. Teddy knew his end was coming.
Yeah.
Dominic even comments how prisons are as colonized as it gets because yep. Teddy is called by his number and no one will ever call him by his native name again.
That sentence brought tears to my eyes.
That's true.
Yeah. Alcoholism is a serious issue
mm-hmm.
in Canada and the Arctic. You know, Patrick, you shared a Vice video about prohibition in Northern Canada. 5 minutes into that video, they're like, hey, we've lived at the very tippy top of the world. And everything was like, you know, we survived until colonizers came in and destroyed us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And oh my God. Yeah. That video.
That video, the tribe they're following or like the people they're following, their native word for alcohol is bad water.
Mm-hmm.
And the interviewer is going with the police to a call that someone is like banging on someone's door because they're drunk. And they have to stop before getting that call because they have to pick up another drunk man from the street. You know, it's really sad. Should there mm-hmm. be prohibition in these things? I don't think so, because that whole mindset goes to like the war on drugs in America, how it just caused a drug boom in America.
Yeah, and look at prohibition in the 20s.
Instead of just teaching people, just teach people. And like mm-hmm. one of the ladies who lives in the town in Canada, she mentions like every culture, when something new like this is introduced, they go through a wild time. It's just been introduced so late to us. We don't know how to handle it, but we've also never been told how to handle it or taught how to handle it. We just drink it and go and go. And it's like, yeah. And what do? Prohibition. Don't get it. So now you're going to charge half your paycheck to go out and buy it illegally for the bootleggers mm-hmm. to get it. Because there's always a way to get it. There's always a way to find it.
Yeah. It's the easiest thing to know about any addiction. Someone will always find a way to get what they need from their addiction.
Even in this story, Dominic talks about how Teddy was from a dry county.
Yeah.
And they would spend $100 on some shitty Canadian whiskey that should cost $7.
Yeah.
Yeah. Throw away the cap because you're drinking it all.
Exactly. You know, hearing some of these interviews and, you know, my heart goes out to Big Bob.
Oh, mm-hmm. Big Bob.
I mean, he has a fur hat made out of Crown Royal sacks.
Which is a lot. You know, during one of the interviews, Dominic says it's noon and he's finished half a fifth of whiskey that's just sitting on his chest. It's sad. Okay. It's really sad.
You know, it sounds like there's a lot of sympathy for Teddy and his situation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to read reviews of this audio book/podcast because some people do not like it, and they don't understand why there is so much sympathy.
First off, before I go into that thing, I do want to say, anyone that gave this one star because they don't like the podcast format and it's an audiobook Audible thing, fuck off. It's a good story. Just listen to it. Sure, it's not an audiobook like you're looking for, but to give it one star because of that, come on.
Yeah. That's like saying, I'm sorry, this movie was in black and white and not color, therefore it sucked.
I think, though, a lot of people in this day and age, technology is a blessing and a curse. And I think as technology grows and social media grows, you become so focused on yourself. Don't get me wrong, there's a lot of social movements and a lot of good things that have come from this. But as an individual, there's a lot of just me, me, me. So the idea of like, oh, this person got himself into it, he deserves what he got, instead of like sitting and listening. I mean, there's a backstory and there's a reason these things happened. Yeah, what he did is bad and he got punishment for it, but you can still feel empathy and sympathy for this guy. Like, it's a sad thing.
Yeah, just like if there were more resources available to him, I mean, generations ago, like resources for his grandparents or parents, just like, you know, places that they can go and be more of a community rather than just, you know, this is what we should be doing, you know, because this is how we were colonized and like we were put in this position and just told like, all right, now live the way we want you to live.
Oh, yeah. You need better housing?
Yeah.
Fall in line. You need better funding? Fall in line.
Yep.
Yeah. We're going to come and bring this technology to you so that you're addicted to it and you need it to survive because the way you were living wasn't good enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
You have to be like us.
Yeah. Well, all your entire belief system, your language, no. That, get rid of that. Your entire identity, forget it.
Yeah, they were mere savages before we came along.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Unless people have, like, experience, don't judge. And that's another thing that they talk about in this book is no judgment. You can't judge.
Yeah, that's my blood. I don't, like, that line where he talks about Teddy, he's like, I can't judge him. That's my blood. Like, well, who am I to judge? Like,
that's why storytelling is so important, because you get that empathy, you get a whole history.
Yep.
And you get to understand why things happen the way they do, why things progress the way they do. And without that, it's, I'm sorry, you should know this. You need to be a better person. Obviously, you have failed and you're not a good person.
And it's so important when it comes to who is telling that story.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because if you have someone telling, if Ben Stein is telling the story, it's mundane and boring. But you need someone who's going to, when they tell the story, the emotions, the anger that comes from parts of the story, or the sadness or the empathy that comes from, you need to hear that in the storyteller. Because a lot of times when you're hearing stories, you're a child. And the way something's told to you as a child is very impactful on you. If you have a boring storyteller, sorry.
I know. I do. One of the things that I love to do when I read to the kids, I will ham it up as much as I can, because not only does that make for a better story, but that gets them into and like wanting to listen and wanting to seek out stories for themselves and listen to other people and not just be like, oh, somebody's talking, I'm not gonna pay attention. It's like, oh, you're telling me a story, you're really into it, let me sit and listen. And yeah, it's so important.
And you know, kids always have follow-up questions, so it's important that their questions are answered authentically. You know, they're not like, oh, well, that part, yeah, no, that wasn't that important. This is the part you need to focus on, you know?
Yeah.
And three people from different backgrounds could read the same story and it could be a completely different experience.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said at the beginning of this, I listened to this three times and each time, like, I felt differently about the story.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep. Storytelling is important because it provides history and awareness.
Yeah.
Thinking about the history of Thanksgiving and Native Americans that I was taught, it's so incorrect.
Oh my God, extremely.
I don't mean to laugh because it's awful, but I'm so grateful for the awareness that I have gained from stories, from movies, yeah. you know, from Blood Quantum. Yeah. I would have never known about residential schools or that horrific side of the fishing industry.
Yeah.
Ugh.
And this is why having representation is so important in films, books, mm-hmm. media, art.
And when we say representation, I don't want stereotypical, like, movie representation. I want just...
Authentic. Yeah.
Normal representation.
Yeah, we need yeah. the people who experience these stories to tell them.
Yes.
Listening to this, I was reflecting on my own heritage and, like, not, you know, being adopted and everything. And when I finally had the opportunity to meet my birth family, like, I quickly realized that all I have are stories. You know, I might get pictures here and there, but the way that I'm going to experience, like, fully experience my family and get that connection is through the stories that I'm told. And one of the first times that I met some of my birth family, like, we just sat at a table, we ate, and, like, everybody was telling me stories, and, like, I didn't know any of these people, and they were telling me stories about, you know, grandparents, aunts, uncles. I'm like, I don't care that I don't know them. I feel just being here in this situation, sitting around the table, having dinner together and hearing these stories, I felt connected like I never have. In that TED Talk, Seth Fairchild, he said, like, to see somebody through the eyes of another, like, that's amazing. Because, yeah, like, nobody's going to hear your ancestors. You're not going to hear your ancestors' voices anymore. But you can hear them through stories.
So true.
Yeah.
You're also giving life to the people in the story who may not be around anymore. You're still remembering them and bringing them back in a weird way.
Yeah, just like, Dia de los Muertos that we just celebrated. That's, you know, the point to, you know, talk about the people who are no longer here to, you remember them and then, you know, they're here with you. You can feel them. And, you know, and it's not enough to just, you know, have a picture up of somebody. It's, you need to talk about them, carry on those stories. And that's the most authentic way to progress, I think.
The end.
Yeah, I don't, there's nothing else really to say after that. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram.
I mean, this is a super good segue into our Tulpa convo.
Yes.
Well, next month our topic is going to be Tulpas, which is all about manifestation through belief.
It's gonna be fun.
I'm excited.
Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Check us out at beyondthescreams.com, where you can sign up for our newsletter and get a heads up on every month topic.
And we also have a Patreon that we are giving away some great stuff. So go check us out at our Patreon and sign up.
Yeah, and don't forget, we also have another watch party coming up next month.
Ooh. It may be a double feature. Who knows?
Maybe. I know, right?
If Holly can stay up that late.
This concludes our month honoring Native Americans and First Nations and Indigenous people.
Which doesn't mean we are going to conclude honoring them.
No.
We should always, always, and forever honor everybody.
If you really want to help out, go look up the Nova Scotia lobster industry and see what they're doing to the First Nations over there and start helping them out.
Seriously.
Yeah.
A part of who we are, you know, there's a lot of stories to tell about it, you know, especially about the transitions that we have in life and making the changes and adjusting, you know. So there's definitely a lot of stories out there that need to be told. And I think, you know, once they're told, I think a lot of people, society in general, would really get a good idea of who we are.